This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Today, we're hitting the highways. There are about 3.5 million freight drivers in the U.S. That's according to the American Trucking Association. But some of those big rigs could soon be going driverless.
There's a chance that a semi-truck has or will roll up beside you with no hands on the wheel. Driverless trucks are being tested as we speak on Oklahoma roads.
This is an interchange from I-20 to I-45.
At a quick glance, nothing really seems out of the ordinary. But if you look closely, you'll notice Rob isn't actually controlling the steering wheel, nor is he pressing the pedals. Instead, each movement is being controlled by a computer.
Right now, it's driving itself.
Yeah, completely.
Two companies, Aurora Innovations and Kodiak Robotics, are testing self-driving semi-trucks in a handful of states. The companies say they plan to go completely driverless on some stretches of highway in Texas by the end of this year. We'll hear from Kodiak's head of policy later in the show. Coming up, we explore whether fully autonomous semi-trucks are safe enough to get the green light. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, the automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy explains how Betterment's technology helps investors better understand and save on taxes.
So taxes are a real cost of investing, as are fees. Understanding your after-tax, after-fee returns is really what's important for investors. An example would be when you buy and sell securities frequently, you can pay a lot of taxes because short-term capital gains, meaning I bought it and I sold it fairly quickly, have higher taxes than long-term capital gains. Our technology in particular will tell you what the tax implication of a particular move you'd like to make is going to be before you make that move so that you're making it with full transparency.
Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed.
Joining us from Grand Valley, Missouri is Louis Pugh. He's Executive Vice President of the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association. That's an organization that advocates on behalf of professional truckers at the state and federal levels. Louis, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure, as always.
Also joining us is Andrew Hawkins. He's the Transportation Editor for The Verge. Andrew, welcome back.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So the autonomous trucking industry and tech journalists are talking about 2024 as the year of the self-driving truck. Andrew, why is that?
Well, I think it's what you're seeing now is a number of these companies are feeling more confident in their technology, that they're now at the stage where they're able to take the driver out of the equation. And I think that's because, you know, this technology has been under development for a number of years now, over a decade. You know, it's very similar to the technology that powers self-driving cars that are operating currently in states like Arizona and California. Obviously, just in a different sort of package. You know, instead of a small sedan or a minivan, you have a Class 8 tractor trailer. And so what you're seeing now is these companies saying, okay, the technology is mature, we're feeling confident, we're feeling that things are going to be safe enough, let's start taking some of the drivers out of these vehicles and see how they operate on the roads.
Louis, you were a trucker for more than two decades. How is driving a semi-truck different from driving a car?
It's a huge difference. I mean, of course, everything with a truck is a lot bigger, a lot heavier. It takes longer to get going. It takes a lot longer to stop. Every movement is multiplied because the tires, the wheels, the steering, and so much is different. A little turn of the wheel in a truck is a lot different than a little turn of a wheel in a car. When you hit a bump or anything like that, the reaction, of course, is a lot different. You also, with, you know, a Class 8 tractor trailer, you have a trailer back there, so you pivot. It's 70 feet long. There's 18 wheels and tires moving there. So there's a lot more moving parts, not to mention. Then you add in the type of freight and load that you're hauling, because the way you drive a tanker truck with liquid chemicals is maybe completely different than the way you drive a van trailer with a whole bunch of boxes of cereal or stuff like that. So there's all these different things, and every load you haul, depending on what it weighs, because maybe this load only weighs 20,000 pounds on the trail, and as far as load weight, tear weight, and then the next load weighs 45 or 50,000 pounds, all these things makes everything about that truck change and how that truck handles and maneuvers change.
Andrew, beyond the technology being developed or getting to a place where companies are comfortable with it, why is there a push for self-driving trucks right now? What's behind that?
Well, I think a number of these companies are under financial pressure to get the technology ready to the point where they can start operating fully driverless vehicles. They have investors. They have certain timelines in which they have milestones that they need to hit. Several of them are actually publicly traded companies. They went public by merging with blank check companies in the midst of the pandemic, which was a trend at the time. So there are a number of financial milestones that they need to hit, and they need to start seeing a return. And then their investors want to start seeing a return on their investment. So they need to start generating revenue for their investors, and to do that, they need to start realizing some of the benefits that they claim that they will get from driverless vehicles. And that's obviously benefits from reduced labor costs, from uptime, trucks operating more frequently than driver operated trucks can operate. So I think there's a number of factors at play here that we're starting to see why these companies are willing to sort of take the next step and start operating fully driverless vehicles on public roads.
And just a quick clarification, you mentioned blank check companies. What are those?
Those are called special purpose acquisition companies, or SPACs. By merging with basically a company that just exists on paper, these companies can go public. They can IPO in a much faster, more streamlined manner than a traditional IPO. So that gets them out into the public, trading stock on the stock exchange much faster than the traditional process.
Well, we asked you how you thought and felt about self-driving semi-trucks. Let's go to our inbox.
I live in Tucson, Arizona, right near I-10, which is a major highway. And I love the idea of self-driving semi-trucks. Too many semi-truck drivers are getting into accidents and causing very dangerous, fatal accidents, especially in my area. So I would love to see robots take over what humans can't do, which is provide safety.
Semi-truck drivers, I find, are very dangerous in many cases. They're very erratic in their speed. They can be really aggressive. And so the idea of self-driving autonomous semi-trucks, to me, would be a much better situation overall for safety. Of course, once the kinks are worked out for self-driving technology, but just based on my experience, I feel like the robots are going to be a lot more likely to be less aggressive and dangerous on the roads.
Ronnie in Arizona and Nathan in Maryland, thanks for those messages. Louis, how do you respond to those concerns that having a computer behind the wheel is safer than having a human driver?
I guess I'd start with, you better be careful what you wish for sometimes. it all sounds really good, I'm sure, to folks, or to some folks. I mean, it sounds very scary to me, in my opinion. I have 2.5 million miles of safe driving, so I don't think I was aggressive, and I think many people do. I will not disagree that sometimes drivers make mistakes, and there's mistakes made. I think part of that is a completely different discussion from this, which falls back on entry-level training and stuff like that about trucking that doesn't happen and needs to be addressed. As far as these machines, I remind folks, I think everybody in pretty much in today's world has a car with Bluetooth, as do I have a 2022. Half the time, I can't get my cell phone to connect to my car. So that makes me very cautious about if I can't get my cell phone, because to me that seems like a very basic technology. That seems very basic. And so if that doesn't work correctly all the time, I get really kind of concerned about something with 80,000 pounds going down the road. Another thing that's never been addressed or no one seems to be talking about in this much is what if these items are hacked? Because that is a problem. There's lots of people in this world who don't really like us. We see computer systems and big companies. They're constantly getting their computer systems hacked from overseas, from countries that are, again, of people who don't like America. I watched a show not too long ago where they were hacking into a car and starting it, stopping it, using the brakes with a laptop and very little technology.
I want to bring Andrew in on this because, Andrew, what are the regulations and standards at the national level that these companies need to meet before their semi-trucks can be on the road?
Currently, there are no regulations pertaining to driverless vehicles in America. You know, the United States has a system in which vehicles of all types, cars, trucks, vans, are expected to meet certain safety requirements as laid out by the federal government's motor vehicle safety standards. And then it's up to the states to license and oversee and regulate drivers. And so that's basically the system that exists today for driverless vehicles, where you have over two dozen states that have passed some regulations around self-driving vehicles, allowing for them to operate on public roads. Some states, like California, for example, don't allow vehicles over 10,000 pounds, I believe. Mm-hmm. To operate without a driver in behind the wheel, but other states like Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, many others allow for fully driverless vehicles. So it's basically just sort of a patchwork system that we have today. There has been legislation introduced in the Senate and the House of Representatives, but it's been stalled for a number of years and they haven't been able to get anything out of committee.
Let's head to a quick break. When we return, we hear from one company that plans to have fully self-driving semis on the road later this year. Stay with us.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Get your quote at Progressive.com and see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com.
Let's jump back into our conversation about the future of self-driving semi-trucks and how soon they could be hitting our highways. Two companies, Aurora Innovation and Kodiak Robotics, hope to have a fleet of driverless big rigs on the road in Texas by the end of the year. I want to get to this text. Glenn in South Carolina says, I see self-driving or driverless trucks as being about one thing, not having to pay someone to drive a loaded truck from point A to point B. I am a retired truck driver with 41 years of experience. Robo-trucks, AI, and other labor-saving devices are job killers. Andrew, with this technology, is the plan at this point to have no human in the vehicle at all? How are the companies talking about that aspect?
Yeah, they are saying that that is essential to their business models, that having a driver behind the wheel would negate the benefits that you get from either reduced labor costs and also from the safety benefits of having a fully driverless vehicle that, you know, that they say will operate more safely than a human operator can. It's important to point out that that's a theoretical assumption, that driverless vehicles can operate more safely than humans. You know, when we talk about human-driven vehicles, we talk about them in the millions of miles, right? That's how statisticians and scientists look at these figures. Those don't exist for driverless vehicles. We don't have the same type of basis on which to make these assumptions. So a lot of it is purely hypothetical at this point, which I think is an important point to make.
So Andrew, how quickly is the technology in the autonomous trucking industry moving? Give us some context for that.
It's operating basically on the same platform, the same type of sensors and technology that power a lot of self-driving vehicles that we see in companies like San Francisco and Arizona, these robo-taxis that have been, you know, operating for a number of years now with varying forms of success and some controversy as well. So I think it's operating at the same speed that those vehicles are. I think there was an assumption that the trucks were actually going to make it into commercial service a lot sooner than the taxis would, because trucks operate on an easier domain. They're in highways, closed roads, less interaction with pedestrians, cyclists, intersections, signage, traffic signals, things like that. But that didn't turn out to be the case. I think that there was a lot of excitement around robo-taxis. That's why they started to go into commercial service a lot quicker. And then we start to see some of the problems associated with that speed. So I think the trucking companies are looking at the robo-taxi companies, seeing where the pitfalls have been, where they have stumbled, where they have been tripped up over technology issues, and are trying to sort of make sure that their trucks operate a lot more safely and are sort of taking note of those and trying to learn some lessons from some of the other companies.
Well, in September of last year, the Congressional Highways and Transportation Subcommittee held a hearing on autonomous commercial motor vehicles. Here's Democratic Representative Eleanor Norton of Washington, D.C., speaking at that hearing.
Autonomous vehicles have the potential to save lives by reducing traffic crashes caused by human behavior. But that potential is not a guarantee. Potential safety benefits must be carefully weighed against risks, especially when public roads are being used as testing grounds for new technologies. The bottom line cannot be saving money. It must be saving lives.
Now, these trucks are being tested in Texas and Oklahoma. But Andrew, how much variation is there in the regulatory environment for these trucks from state to state?
A number of states have passed laws and executive orders allowing for the operation of driverless trucks on public roads. And I think that a lot of that is going to be contingent on the actual operation. So when the trucks actually start to roll out without drivers behind the steering wheel, I think regulators are going to be watching very closely to ensure that they're operating in a safe manner. And as we saw in California, which has a very well-delineated regulatory structure for driverless vehicles, the states can give and they can also take away, as we saw with Cruise and the robo-taxis incidents that happened last year when a pedestrian was struck and drugged for several feet by a driverless vehicle operated by this company called Cruise that's backed by General Motors. So the states are going to be watching the companies. The companies are going to be trying to work as closely as they can with the states. But if there is an incident, if there's especially a safety incident or a crash, those permits to operate in those states can quickly be revoked and there can be investigations, fines, or even just outright bans if companies are determined to not be operating in a safe manner.
Louis, is there any way in which you can see this technology being a benefit to human drivers?
I mean, maybe way, way, way down the road. I mean, I think we've been talking about this. We need to get this right in cars before we ever put it in an 80,000-pound vehicle, because trucks and truckers are forced to operate in all types of conditions, weathers, roads, stuff. I mean, I used to haul frac sand in West Virginia, and I was pulled up the side of a mountain with a bulldozer because it was so steep and let back down. There's lots of things here that people in the tech world probably don't really understand what truckers do. But highway users shouldn't be guinea pigs for these trucks to be out here till we get this right in cars. I mean, we've already heard of the car accidents. We continue to see the car accidents. And like I said in the beginning of this, trucks are way, 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 way more complicated than what a car is, and driving a car and operating a car. So, yeah, do I maybe 20 years down, I don't know. I can't say how far, but someday I don't think it's going to take over the entire trucking industry. There's probably parts and pieces of the trucking industry that these can do way, way down in the future once we get them working and get them working correctly and safe. And I would agree with your callers who say this is a lot of this is just driven by shareholders and stockholders and large trucking companies and stuff trying to figure out a way to not pay truckers correctly or pay truckers at all. Large trucking's been trying to do that for 40 years, not pay truckers. So this feels right in their wheelhouse.
What would you want to see, Louis, from federal regulators or the trucking companies themselves to feel like these trucks are safe or that a transition to this technology makes sense?
I think first and foremost, mandated data transparency, because right now there is no mandate or any kind of rule where they have to be transparent with their data. I think when we start talking about trucks driving themselves, 100% all the data should be transparent for all users and safety. I think federal regulations coming from FMCSA and those from above that everyone has to follow. That's what truckers have to do and follow is FMCSA regulations.
And FMCSA, what does that stand for?
Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. That is the branch of government who works under DOT and oversees all trucking and highway of commercial vehicles. I would like to see a human operator as a fail, at least in the near term, if not forever, as a fail-safe in case something would happen as far as these trucks go, something messes up, something goes wrong, something shifts with the load, somebody needs to be in there because, you know, we don't even talk about the load and what happens to the load and sometimes what a driver has to do. And then I think we need some pretty, pretty stiff government regulation and fail-safe to make sure that these items are not hacked by country or used to be used as a weapon or something to that effect.
Well, that's Louis Pugh. He's Executive Vice President of the Owner Operator Independent Drivers Association. That's an organization that advocates on behalf of professional truckers at the state and federal levels. Louis, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
And let's welcome another voice to the conversation. Daniel Goff is head of policy with Kodiak Robotics. That's a developer of self-driving long-haul trucks. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on today.
So how many autonomous semi-trucks does Kodiak Robotics have on the road right now?
Sure. So we have a fleet of about 35 trucks that are currently delivering freight 24/7 between our Dallas operations hub in Houston, Austin, Oklahoma City, and Atlanta. We've been on the roads in Texas and beyond for almost 5 years now, driven over 2.5 million, almost 3 million miles, and delivered about 5,000 loads of freight for our customers safely and efficiently. So this is a technology that's actually on the roads every day and that people are interacting with on a daily basis and are very comfortable with.
How much transparency is there for other drivers on the road around the fact that they may be driving in the vicinity of one of these self-driving vehicles?
So we've got a big, fat Kodiak logo on the side of our trucks. We're not exactly hiding it. And you can see the sensors off the, what we call our sensor pods, which are basically, we replace the stock mirrors on the trucks with side view mirrors that have all the sensors we need to see the road around. We don't have other markings for a few reasons. One of which is that we've found and the industry has found over the last 10, 15 years that when you put markings that say this is a self-driving truck, people tend to behave differently and often do stupid things. They'll do the sort of the classic get in front of the vehicle and slam on the brakes to see if the vehicle can respond. And while it generally can, it still incentivizes bad driving behavior from other people. So we think it's better to not put a sign up saying, you know, that this is an autonomous vehicle.
Andrew, how much concern is there around that issue that other drivers on the road, because if I saw Kodiak before this show on the side of a truck, I wouldn't know that that might mean that was a self-driving semi-truck. If I saw the sensors, I likely wouldn't know what I was actually looking at. So how much concern is there that drivers around these trucks don't actually know they're on the road with them?
I mean, just in general, there's a lot of concern around autonomous vehicles. I know that there have been a number of surveys that have been done that show that people's skepticism and unease about self-driving vehicles has gone up over year over year. I think the latest figure I saw is that 66% of people say that they don't want self-driving cars. They would never buy one for themselves. They don't feel like they are safe. So it does seem clear that the industry has a lot of work to do in terms of conveying trust to the greater public, also sort of explaining why this technology is necessary, why it's needed, why we should be working on it. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion swirling around about AI in general. And it's interesting because in transportation, we've been talking about self-driving and autonomy for many years before these chatbots and other things have come onto the scene. But it seems now that it's kind of all being smooshed into one big issue now. And I think also the incidents of with robo-taxis in several cities, traffic being blocked, confused cars, some pedestrians being struck has also colored a lot of people's perceptions about it. But in terms of communicating the fact that a vehicle is autonomous, that's something that the industry is definitely having a lot of conversations about right now. And I can understand sort of Dan's position, not wanting to over communicate that the technology exists in order to discourage bad behavior.
We got this email from Elliot, who has two concerns. With no uniform standards and requirements, there should be substantial worries regarding cybersecurity or lack thereof. Cybersecurity costs money with no direct return. Without regulation, there's substantial risk regarding resources expended for cybersecurity amplified if there's no specific regulation and legal liability. Also, who owns all the data? Location data, route data, etc. How long is it retained? Can it be sold? Will law enforcement have unlimited access? Dan, what can you tell us?
So I think on the cybersecurity question, actually, there are a lot of best practices and regulations from the federal government around cybersecurity. The U.S. Department of Transportation and the National Institute for Standards and Technology have both promulgated best practices around cybersecurity, and I think cybersecurity issues are very real, but they're also very solvable. And one of the things that we're working on at Kodiak is we have a program where we are adapting our trucking technology for the U.S. Army to build autonomous vehicles for surveillance and for intelligence purposes with the U.S. Army. And through that program, one of the things we're working on with them is developing a cybersecurity program. So having the best minds in cybersecurity in the U.S. military work on securing our vehicles. And we think that this is something that we can do and that's really critical for ensuring that we are able to operate securely both on road and with the U.S. military.
And briefly to the data ownership question?
For now, we own the data that we collect on the road. We're very careful about how we use that, and we don't share it with third parties, with a couple of exceptions. We've actually developed a program with some of our partners and departments of transportation where we've actually shared real-time road condition data with them to show where there are potholes, where there are issues with the road, with the hopes that we can help improve road maintenance and make driving better for everybody. But in general, we're not actually sharing that data with third parties on a regular basis.
Let's pause here. Still to come, how soon could self-driving semi-trucks be on the road in other regions of the country? We'll be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon.
Dan, we're getting lots of questions from our audience. Steve in Newberry, Massachusetts emails, imagine this, there's a pothole ahead. Does the vehicle brake suddenly or does it quickly swerve? What does the vehicle behind do? Sounds like a crash scenario to me. So just talk us through a scenario like that. How would your technology respond?
Sure. So I think our technology would respond a lot like a human would. Our technology has been designed to drive like a human and really been built off of the work that our test drivers, what we call safety drivers, are doing every day in the trucks. So they're pulling in information
from all of the sensors on the vehicle. We have 18 different sensors on our latest generation of truck. It's pulling in all of that information 10 times a second, processing that information, and making a plan for where to drive. So when drivers go to driving school, they're trained to look sort of at the area around the truck on a cycle. So they'll look straight ahead, and then they'll look at the left side view mirror, and then they'll go back to straight ahead again, and they'll look at the other side view mirror, and then they'll look straight ahead again. And that cycle takes about 6 seconds. And as I said, we're operating on a 10 times a second cycle, pulling information from all of these different sensors that are looking 360 degrees around the truck all the time. So we're just gathering more information and have more understanding of the world around the truck than a human driver ever could. And so how would our truck respond to these scenarios? It would respond like a human would and do what's safe. If you're in heavy traffic, probably, you know, not do anything crazy like slam on the brakes because of a large pothole. So I think we've had a lot of chance to really test this technology in the real world and using all of the different tools we have to test. And we think this is, technology is already among the best tested and best understood drivers ever to be on the road.
Dan, clearly you have, I guess I'll call it a marketing hurdle to overcome here with American drivers. The idea of having a truck that doesn't have a human behind the wheel, not for all, but for many who we're hearing from today, it makes them very nervous. I understand the economic proposition of this technology, but if the concern is around safety and making roads safer, why not use the technology to augment the driver, the human driver behind the wheel? Why not think about a way that that technology can work in tandem with a person?
You know, I think we've seen, and this is to maybe go down a bit of a rabbit hole here, but I think we've seen with some of the really advanced driver assistance systems like Tesla Autopilot and otherwise, that actually really advanced driver assistance systems and human drivers don't coexist very peacefully. That if you have a system that's works pretty well, you know, like the adaptive cruise control in many people's cars, but you still really need to be engaged in that driving task, you still really need to be paying attention, that people do pay attention and that can help increase safety. But when you get to something where you're looking at a, you know, 20 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles, 1,000 miles between interventions, people stop paying attention. And I know certainly I would. I think that being a safety driver in autonomous vehicles is an incredibly difficult job. And so I think you just run into, I'm very sympathetic to that argument, but I think you run into a practical problem that the vision that what people are encouraging with systems that have these very high capabilities, but a human there in that, you know, one time every 3 years where something goes wrong, that's not actually a model that's going to work.
I want to bring one more perspective into the conversation. Joan Claybrook sits on the board for Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety. She served as the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration during the Carter administration. Joan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, your administration issued the first airbag rule, the first standardized crash tests for cars. Another of your legacies is that retractable stop sign we see on school buses. So you've been doing this work for decades. Why are self-driving vehicles the next frontier of safety for you when it comes to regulations?
They're highly untested. The amounts of testing done for just regular cars on the highway are huge, and we haven't got anywhere near that with autonomous vehicles, much less autonomous trucks. I'm particularly concerned about autonomous trucks because they are huge. They do tremendous damage. And when there's a crash between a car and a truck, any kind of truck, the people who are killed and injured and desperately injured are the people in the cars. So I say we have to be much more cautious than we have been. Also, there's been an increase, even without autonomous trucks, from 5,000 to 6,000 killed and over 160,000 injured in recent years. In 2022, there was just about 6,000 people killed in big truck crashes. So we have a lot of work to do, and the government is not at all prepared to issue safety standards for these vehicles. They don't have the technology skills inside the government, and there are many, many areas where these trucks present challenges and hazards that are not being addressed. I think that it's way too soon to put them on the highway.
And we're getting lots of questions from you. One of you says, I drive a tanker for a living and the automated driver assistance systems regularly alert me that I'm going to collide with an overpass or a feature on the outside of a curve. Automatic braking kicks in if I'm on cruise control. This system often glitches and is unavailable until I come to a stop and switch the ignition off to reboot the system. How does the automated system operated by Kodiak deal with such quote-unquote small problems as they crop up during a trip? Dan?
Yeah, I would say that the technology we're developing is light years more sophisticated than the sort of rudimentary ADAS systems that I know that, frankly, a lot of drivers have challenges with on the trucking side. So we are developing a system that is really designed from the ground up and from the beginning to operate truly driverlessly. We are operating with a trained professional commercial safety driver behind the wheel. But we don't have a lot of those challenges. And when we do, we're in an ongoing development process. So any issue that the vehicle has is automatically tagged and reviewed by engineers so that we can close these issues and solve them one by one. And we're not putting anything out on the road that has these kind of ongoing challenges that unfortunately that sounds like your listener is having.
And what is your timeline for having the driverless trucks on the road?
Yeah, so we're planning our first driverless runs by the end of 2024, and that'll be on a very limited basis. You know, it's a journey of 1,000 autonomous miles, begins with 1,000 autonomous steps, but we're not planning on, you know, scaling this up to even, you know, a dozen, let alone hundreds or thousands of trucks this year or next year. But we do think this technology is coming, and we think we're building that safety case and that proof that we can operate safely. I think something a lot of people don't know is that autonomous vehicle developers are required by law to report any incident, no matter how small, to the U.S. Department of Transportation. And so there is a spreadsheet that the public can download and that shows any time we have any incident, no matter how small. We're talking things like, rear endings that cause no damage, bird strikes, very, very small incidents. Any tiny little thing gets reported and gets investigated by the Department of Transportation, at least to some extent. And that information is all publicly available. And it paints a really strong picture for the autonomous trucking industry, with really only a handful of incidents.
Joan, I want to give you the last word here. What would you like to see from NHTSA on self-driving semis?
Well, I'd like to see them to have some technology people that really understand the autonomous systems. They have very little talent, unfortunately, inside DOT at this moment, and we've been pushing for it to happen. I'd like to see federal performance standards that these vehicles would have to meet for all the different aspects of the involvement on the highway. A reporting of crashes involving fatalities, injuries, and property damage. Yes, they do have to report incidents, but I don't think that it's the full measure of reporting that you're going to need to make an evaluation of these vehicles. We'd like to see no request by the industry, which has been constant, for mass exemptions from existing federal safety standards for various reasons, and the collecting of the data and making it publicly available and analyzing it so you understand the whole input of it. And then requiring driverless trucks to always have an operator with a valid CDL in the vehicle until we're way down the road on this issue.
That was Joan Claybrook. She sits on the Board of Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety. She also served as head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in the Carter administration. Also with us was Daniel Goff, the head of policy for Kodiak Robotics, and Andrew Hawkins. He's transportation editor at The Verge. Thanks to you all. Today's producer was Anna Casey. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the NPR Wine Club. Get the world of wine delivered to your door. When you join the NPR Wine Club, you'll receive the stories behind every bottle and favorite NPR shows and personalities arriving in liquid form, like Weekend Edition Cabernet and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Zinfandel. The NPR Wine Club is a delicious way to support NPR's programming.
If you're 21 or older, uncork a special offer at nprwineclub.org/podcast. Support for NPR and the following message come from Bombas. Bombas makes absurdly soft socks, underwear, and T-shirts. And for every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness. Get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/NPR and use code NPR.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.